And of course, our special guest tonight, John Hoag, as we talk about his prophecies and predictions, his website, hoagprophecy.com, linked up for you at coasttocoastam.com. Welcome back, John Hoag with it. John, I've got a lot of people concerned about the Fukushima radiation. They think it's just the tip of the iceberg. What do you feel? What do you see? What do you think?
Well, I'm actually going to be a voice of, it's pretty much opposite to what's chicken littling out there on the internet. I will say this, that I also looked into this and thought, wow, it really sounds like we're about to see Chernobyl. The Pacific is going, the Northern Pacific is going to be irradiated. Nobody will be able to eat fish. I live in the Pacific Northwest, so if there's a cloud coming this way, it's definitely going to affect my life and in my corner of the world. So all of the things of common sense were telling me that this is going to be really a bad situation. But as often happens in my work with prophecy, when I consult my oracle, it often, a lot of the things I'm telling you on this show are not things, as many of you believe who write me, are my personal opinions or my personal political persuasions. A lot of you out there think I'm some bleeding liberal. In fact, I'm a Republican. So it's just the way, or at least when I used to be part of the two-faced party scheme, I used to call myself a Republican. I've never been a Democrat.
You call it the way you see.
Yeah, and so, but of course, when you, I understand that when you make the kind of predictions I make about politics and religion, that you're going into very dangerous mind fields, that when you step on somebody's delicate projections.
And you're going to.
You're going to blow something up, and they're going to, they're either one day going to love you to death because you agree with everything they believe about God or the lack of God or right-wing or left-wing views. The Obama readers are just as angry with me as the Republican readers. So I must be doing my job well, because I follow, like in Fukushima, I'm getting the same backlash from people because basically I looked into it and there is no threat. That a lot of this that is coming up right now, no threat for 2014 for now.
For now, that's an important phrase.
Important phrase, because, but where the problem with this, and I also have to say that there are people on the internet that have quite a following that run on things without a whole lot of skeptical inquiry, and kind of get lost in their own narrative to a point where they actually foment more confusion and panic. And in some cases, I think some of these people, more and more I look into them, some of them who are rather large figures in the alternative media almost act like they're a part of Operation Mockingbird, or a version of that from the Central Intelligence Agency that back in the 60s used to plant people in the UFO community. And actually, this might be a great thing to do on Ancient Aliens. I don't know, George, if you've done that on the show, but just to kind of look at the way Mockingbird planted people into the UFO community that started to make very compelling but outrageously crazy statements that were actually meant to get the mainstream public to just blow it all off as, oh, little green men and crazy people. It happened also with the conspiracies of 9-1-1, mm-hmm. Very similar thing to what happened to UFOs. And I'm starting to see similar things with the Boston Marathon bombings, as well as with Fukushima, where people are being drilled up into a hysteria, where people are basically misreading. You don't have nuclear physicists that are actually reading a lot of those Geiger counters along the California coast. For instance, some of the people who are reading to some great fanfare in certain internet outlets that there was thousands of Rentgens, things were totally radioactive near Mono Bay and all that area, are not looking into the fact that certain rock emit radioactivity that, for instance, if you eat bananas and you take a Geiger counter, you're gonna
radiate.
Yeah, because certain elements have radiate. It's just like what happened with ELF back in the 90s, there was a period there where people didn't even want to get close to their computers, and
gotcha.
They put all kinds of things on them to dull out the ELF. And I got a little into that until I actually became more skeptically inquiring and discovered that my automobile engine actually emits more ELF than 10 computers. So if what they're saying is true, everybody should have died of cancer from being on the freeways in California.
So why do you hold back on Fukushima at this point, though?
At this point, I'm thinking all this noise and Chicken Little, the Fukushima sky is falling stuff, is misdirecting people from the real issues. And in my prophecies for 2014, I have a whole chapter about Fukushima where I talk about how it's not the reactor number 3, the reactor number 4, the rods are being replaced safely. I predict that will happen without any event. A lot of the pictures that people are seeing online are actually the destroyed reactors before they were cleaned up. So that's false. The rack number 3 looks a lot better than that. It's a lot more stable. It's gone through a number of aftershocks and major typhoons, and it's handled itself fine. The steam that's coming out of it is something that's been venting off and on because of evaporation. The contacts that I have are people who do care, scientists who surf in the Pacific, who really don't want to be surfing in radioactive waters because they love the sea probably more than most of us. A lot of those scientists who are also working for the NOAA are reporting very clearly that the radiation amounts is diluting. I would also add that 1.5 million people next year are going to die from pollution-related issues. That's more than how many, maybe a dozen people have died from Fukushima already, or the 30,000 people who died from Chernobyl. You know, there are other things that we're putting in the atmosphere that are far more dangerous than radiological right now. But I'm saying that also pointing out that the thing that does concern me is the reservoirs that are rather flimsily built, stacking high, a lot of the water at Fukushima that's radioactive. And what my concern is not so much a tidal wave coming into Fukushima, but a breaking of those rather rickety tanks that would actually spread the water from the land, all the radioactive water, into the Pacific. But my greater concern is not about next year, but about another tsunami, a tsunami that might come as soon as 2017. And it will not actually be from a Tohoku quake re-emerging. It won't even be from a quake happening in the Japanese islands. It'll be happening from my corner of the world. I'm most concerned about the eclipse that is coming on the 2017 August in 2017, because in a couple hours, the shadow of this eclipse will pass over the subduction zone, which is very similar to what you see off the shores of Sumatra, which had the big quake at the end of 2004, the Indian Ocean tsunami. I'm concerned that because when eclipse shadows pass over certain areas, I don't understand. I have no scientific explanation for this yet, but it is an interesting pattern that whenever a total eclipse passes over an area, a large total eclipse, within a few weeks to 18 months afterwards, that a string of earthquakes, natural disasters
occurs.
Well,
yeah.
Well, to give you an example, last time, 1979, a solar eclipse went right over the Pacific Northwest, over Portland, over Mount St. Helens, and a year later, Mount St. Helens blew its top.
Yeah, yeah.
This shadow passes south of Portland this time, but it passes over the south end of the caldera at Yellowstone. It reaches its most high shadowing intensity right over the New Madrid fault line in Missouri and goes off the United States over the Charleston Bulge in Charleston, South Carolina, where the most active seismic area on the east coast of the United States. So except for not hitting the San Andreas Fault or the Mono craters in the Sierras, all these other major areas of seismic activity are going to be under the shadow. So I don't wish to say these things to alarm people, but to help people prepare. People in America do not prepare. If the Americans prepared like they did in Japan, if Japanese acted like Americans, there would have been a couple hundred thousand people killed by the Tohoku quake and tsunami. I'm saying these things for the possibility that these quakes will happen. We need to prepare our buildings. The people of St. Louis and Memphis need to get serious about earthquake retrofitting of their cities. Same in Charleston. The thing that concerns me more, and I talk about in predictions for 2014, is not a supervolcanic eruption in Yellowstone, but something that a lot of people aren't looking at in the kind of watching for earth changes experiences, and that is that this magma lake that's one of the largest in the world, 6 miles or 5 miles underneath the mantle at Yellowstone, could actually shift and cause a 9-point superquake without any eruption. That would affect that whole region, a wide area. So that could happen. So those are the things that are more concerning me. And what would that do is create the kind of wave that in 1700 came all the way across the Pacific Ocean and killed 53,000 Japanese because they were unprepared.
It came. Yeah.
And that was when there were a lot less people there. If that happened now, it might be many more. And if that wave hits Fukushima, or we should pronounce it correctly, Fukushima.
That's how the Japanese pronounce
it. That's what concerns me in the future that might really, that's why I hope that they will shut down those reactors and really seal them off and forget about using them in the next few years so that it's not relevant.
John, you've predicted 12 straight popular vote presidential elections, 12 since 1968. I want to ask you about a couple of candidates. And, you know, every time you're on, we massage it a little bit as we get closer to 2016, which isn't too far away. There were two top candidates that I thought could be very strong in getting the nomination in 2016. On the Republican side, New Jersey Governor Chris Christie. I think that's gone away. I want to get your prophecy take on that. And just today, there was a story released that another possible Bill Clinton scandal that he played around with a Hollywood actress in the White House with Hillary in the room next door. And that's a weird story. Is that going to haunt her? And what about Christie?
Well, it could be the Miss Arkansas that we're talking about here. I'm not sure.
No, it's.
Is it someone else?
Well, it's public. She denies it. Elizabeth Hurley, the actress.
Oh, Elizabeth Hurley.
Now,
okay.
She says it's a bunch of hooey, and says she's got her lawyer in on it. But it's a public story. So,
I don't see anything in Hillary Clinton's destiny related to Bill's finagling, past, present, or future, that is going to deny her very real crack at becoming president of the United States. You know, I've been, over the years, very clear that I see her being president. Now, I also said that a year before the primaries, in March 2nd, 2007, I wrote Hillary Clinton's Albatross at HogueProphecy.com, where I document hundreds of my predictions and hundreds of articles, and you can read them right there, documented. I basically said that she was the shoe-in except for one weak link in her destiny. If she doesn't find a way to explain her vote in favor of going to war in Iraq, The anti-war movement, which Obama will utilize in a very close primary election, is the only way she could be denied her destiny, and that's exactly
what happened. You were right. That's what happened.
Now, I often felt that this would just be a delay of her destiny. And I'm feeling more and more, although I've said in other shows, and I explain in the book on the, I call it the Mephisto midterm elections, which is a whole chapter in predictions for 2014 about what could possibly, the possible scenarios, and how the worst case scenarios might actually favor the Republican Party winning both houses and the presidency if their deepest nightmare happens, that they actually lose power completely to the Democrats in this November's election, might actually play in them having a president in the United States. But if they do not do that, if the gridlock is, if the 16 seats or so, 17 seats are not taken, then you have a worse gridlock that they can be blamed for, whether it's right or wrong. But I would say to the Republicans, the best thing that could happen is to have the Democrats run the Congress for another 2 years and do nothing like they did in the first 2 years of Obama's 8 years in office. And that could then be grounds, as long as the Republican Party redefines itself and comes more to the center, just like Tip O'Neill had to pull the Democrats from the far left to the center after Ronald Reagan beat Mondale to a second term. Tip O'Neill, who was Speaker of the House, realized the Democratic Party had to go away from Kennedy left-wing ideas and come more to the center, or they were going to lose both houses in Congress. He actually preserved the Democratic dominance in the House and Senate for another 10 years. The Republicans need a new Speaker of the House, which they will have, who will also see the writing on the wall demographically and bring the grand old party back to a more moderate stance. If they do not do that, then Democrats will have all the houses and they will have the Supreme Court for 4 years to change, and they will have Hillary Clinton as president.
Wow. But you're not making this prediction yet.
I'm saying this is where it's trending. I'm also trending. Seeing Jeb Bush fading out. And Chris Christie, you know.
Now, you thought Bush could have been a viable candidate a year ago.
Been. But it just seems that when I tune into it now, it's just kind of going into mush right now. That's all. I don't know what that means, but that's the answer. The other thing is, you talk about Chris Christie, and you'll notice that all these years, and it's documented on the tapes of the recordings of this show, I've never given him any feel as
none.
It's just not there. And perhaps what happened with the Bridgegate is enough, but I just don't see. Just like I can see a woman being president, I can see an African-American president.
Yeah.
In 2012, I said, you'll never, not at this stage can you see a Mormon be president. And that happened with Mitt Romney. I do not see a morbidly obese man being president of the United States. It's just not there.
It's not going to happen. Hmm. Well, John, let's talk about some other little issues. There's a possibility that China is going to pull out its saber sword and do something over islands out there fighting with Japan. Is anything going to happen there?
It all depends on how Beijing and the Politburo deals with life under the stars of living under the green wooden horse, the year of the green wooden horse. The last time this happened was when Mao was in power, and what he did was impetuously charge like the 7th Cavalry into twisting and forcing everybody to collectivize, first in the industries and cities, and then in the farms and rural areas. It led to a number of disastrous social experiments that crystallized in the Cultural Revolution, but all stems from decisions to clamp down. A funny situation where history repeats itself in a karmic echo. Mao clamped down to eradicate all capitalism from China, so that his Confucianist, Marxist, Leninist ideas would be fulfilled.
Now it's the other way around. I think Chou Enlai was the one who started it, wasn't
he? Xi, the new Mao, wants to keep all the parts of capitalism that has favored their prosperity as a soft superpower, but wants to schizophrenically suppress all the consequences of free market that brings in more freedom, desires for freedom of speech, and basically threaten the Politburo's power over the people. And that's a rather schizophrenic thing that they're going to charge into, and I think it's going to set off, just like with Mao, a string of cultural and industrial disasters over the next 4 years.
Hold on, John. Let's get into those disasters and what else could happen. John Hogue with us on Coast to Coast AM. John Hogue with us. We're going to get more into his prophecies. I hope you're jotting them down. We're going to track them. We always do. By the way, we'll take your calls with John next hour right here on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back, John Hogue with us. John, China. Let's pick it up from there. So there's no question they're an economic powerhouse. But you know what? They have a bubble that could burst.
They are repeating the same thing that got Mao into power. They have created, just like the national Chinese created cities that are like islands of prosperity, relative prosperity, in an ocean of poor peasants. 400 million forward, actively mobile and improving lives of Chinese in cities is offset by 1 billion people living in abject, crippling poverty. And what frightens the Beijing leaders more than anything else is that they may have become the new nationalists who will be someday overthrown by a new peasant rebellion from a new Mao. And that is very likely to happen, and the key will be in 2016 when, and this is true for all fiat economies, the Chinese are actually doing a lot to hedge their bets and adapt into other possible systems. But a lot of what's going to happen in this period that's like 1914 is between now and 1918, we're going to see the delayed, what they have called the Great Recession, a delayed coming of the what I call the Greater Depression, which will hit the fiat economies of the world, basically the economies that got off the gold standard and floated their reserve currencies based on credit, based on ballooning prices to make more money, which is basically credits that are not backed by anything. And, you know, the one of the things I talk about is the future of Janet Yellen as the next Federal Reserve chairwoman. And basically, I say in the book that she's Bernanke in drag. And and I said back in 2005 when Bernanke was going to take over that he would be go down in history as the man who destroyed the reserve currency of the United States by basically throwing printed money at everything to vast amounts, sure. And he did exactly that. And Janet Yellen is of the same
ilk. Yep.
She is just going to, I said, the quantitative easing, which is putting all this fiat monopoly money into the system, is being taken up by the banks and put into the markets. The stock market is why you have such very high stock markets that look almost like you're reading the Nikkei average rather than a U.S. market because of 14,000, 15,000, 16,000. And I've been saying that when it gets up in the 15,000, 16,000, 17,000 range, that's when this quote-unquote economic recovery will eventually be proven to be a new bubble because we are in a boom-bust cycle, which is basically how a fiat economy works. Now, what is happening that I find hopeful in this is unlike the Great Depression that happened before, and by the way, I point out that in the Great Depression, no one ever called it that when they were under it. It was only after the Depression was over because of rearming the world to fight World War II that somebody coined the phrase the Great Depression. Otherwise, they talked about the Great Depression like we talk about the current situation. Oh, it's a downturn. It's a recession. It's a Great Recession. We're in this depression. I call it a cold depression, like a Cold War. It's sort of hovering a stagnant point of view, a Mexican standoff between pushing the wrong button, hyperinflating something here or there, and causing it to go very hot, very suddenly, like a hot war. Yeah, a very hot depression. We have the danger of it going very hot in two points of this year. One is April through May, and again in October and November, at the peaks of the Uranus-Pluto squares that I was talking about. So that's the most dangerous part in this. Now, I said that Yellen would be starting to take off the quantitative easing and with this tapering, and would be like somebody taking a defibrillator off a dead chest. If you keep pumping the funny money into it, it almost looks animated. But if you pull the plug, this economy will go dead like it started to show itself doing Monday when it dropped 326 points. What is happening is the mainstream news is not talking about it, but there is a rebellion, a revolution in economics that has started that I predicted would start initially with the idea of cryptocurrency, the Bitcoin. What we're going to see is a shift not only away from fiat economies, but from even the gold standard, we are going to see mathematics actually become a system of value. And of course, in any economy, because capitalism comes from the Latin capitalis, which means head, it's all in our head anyway. And if we get enough heads to agree that this is the system, that it has value, it does function. I mean, the fiat economy has worked since 1971 because enough heads believed that that you could basically make a credit system which is backed on nothing, and it worked. But now a lot of heads are abandoning that idea, and they're moving into cryptocurrencies, into Bitcoin, into Litecoin, into Icecoin. Max Kaiser
could be dangerous, but they're moving there.
Well, you know, the funny thing is that all the arguments that it is unusual, and all the arguments that are put out against Bitcoin, it can be laundered for money. I think, what about the $400 or $500 million a year that the Vatican Bank launders since a pope was possibly poisoned in 1978 who was going to expose it because the mafia was using the Vatican Bank, and now it's been admitted by this pope that laundering has still been going on since 1978. And that's money. That's the money we all respect. There's the centralized banks are threatened by a cryptocurrency that needs no bank to put it in, that can basically be in cyberspace and can be secured by your knowing the codes of your money and no one else. It's harder to have it exposed. It's what will eventually happen in the next 2 years of volatility. And what will happen is it will become a whole new value system. And I predict that within 4 to 10 years, the banks of the world will be relics like Pompeii. There will not be any banks to go to. It is not how money will be passed. And people will have more power to do transactions directly with each other. This is a terrifying idea to all those systems of establishment and control that want to keep the control over you. It will happen also in your power grids. There are things coming in the next few years that are literally going to make power grids that we see with the power poles and all that obsolete. And people will actually be able to have power in their house, in their business, that has not had to be linked up to a grid. That is also coming.
That's what Tesla wanted to do.
These things are coming. And when they come, the world will be changed breathtakingly. When 1914 changed the political monarchical systems, that impacted 500 years of behavior. I'm talking about things that are going to upend 5,000 years of behavior. The whole way we think about money as a physical bartering, then as a credit in a paper bond, is all going away. It is disappearing and going to be replaced by a completely different system that the forces that want to control us will be desperate to try to either suppress or find a way to standardize to their advantage. But one thing good I can say about the Aquarian Age we have entered, it is all about citizen action. It's about mass movements of individuals. It's about humanism and humanity and fairness. It has these positive sides that because of the square, we're seeing all the dark sides of Aquarius playing right now, the chaos, the sudden upheavals. But once these squares end around May of 2015, you will begin to see a crystallization of discipline and focus in those rebellions that are going on, currently called the Occupy Wall Street, the Arab Spring, the Tea Party, and others all over the world. We'll begin to get an idea of what they want, how to organize to get it, and eventually this will lead to a major clash with establishments by the end of this decade and the early part of the next. And a bigger picture beyond all this, which is going to generate a greater need to move forward with new ideas, is the fact that we are approaching a planetary disaster. World War Stupid is not a war waged by people, political bodies and units and economies. It is a war of stupidity that is trying to steal our future if we go on habitually playing stupid to what is going on around us. I mean, I look at the future and sometimes see the people looking back at us and just shaking their head and saying, how can people, and even now I'm getting emails from people, the same old story, the same old lack of respect or study or questioning of their opinions, a study of science that is showing mountains of data that is indicating categorically that we are creating the climate change, which is so much a theme in apocalyptic prophecies that I've read over the years in different traditions, of rising oceans, of heating up atmospheres, of great droughts, of superstorms. All of this is very common theme in the prophecies of the world, and it points to a man-made creation of a disaster, of a runaway greenhouse effect that, you know, we scoff at people who deny the Holocaust, but there is an even greater amount of evidence mounted, and even if you look out your window, you will notice that things are getting very extreme on this planet with its weather that should tell you that the oven that we're creating that's a Holocaust for the future of humanity is the oven that is coming out of our smokestacks, our exhaust pipes. We have to get off of fossil fuel, or what I hope and foresee will happen is to understand that we can use fossil fuels cleanly. We can create the technology that can even use methane hydrates out of the sea and use them in a way that doesn't cause pollution, because the hydrates are next. The permafrost, we've now warmed up the ocean enough, and I talk about this in the book, and I call it 400 parts per million of stupid is the chapter, where basically we've reached a point where we have 400 parts per million of carbon in our atmosphere. We need 50 more points to actually raise the average temperature of the Earth 11 degrees. That is catastrophic to our survival as a civilization. It is, you know, World War II affected a lot of people. But I'm talking about consequences of climate change that will kill more people than all the people killed in all the wars in history, all 3,000 of them that we've waged in the last 2,000 years.
Some want that to happen, Joe.
Because of what I've called propaganda, which leads to Armageddonomics. Propaganda is where people over thousands of years misinterpret their apocalyptic revelatory prophecies of their religions to fit their anti-life filtering of what they see as their world. The world is evil, or the world is illusion. That's the Western and the Eastern views of this. So the world is already consigned subconsciously but collectively by us to be a thing we pass through that's destroyed. So if we then look at certain prophecies that accentuate that idea and avoid the others that do not, then we actually encourage what I call the economics of Armageddon. We subconsciously are programmed to make doomsday happen, because in some twisted way, a doomsday outcome is far more simple and familiar to us than actually waking up one morning and realizing, golly, we actually have to fix this thing ourselves. God's not going to come down on a cloud to save us. The 12th Imam is not going to reappear in the Samarra Mosque and lead us back to Jerusalem. The third temple isn't going to be built, because actually the prophecy meant it was supposed to be built in your heart, in your spirit, not as a physical building. You know, the apocalypse wasn't actually something that Jesus saw in our times, but it was actually something he was talking about as a fulfilled prophecy about the destruction of Jerusalem in 69 AD. So that the Antichrist that he was trying to describe through St. John the Divine in the book of Revelations was spelled out 666, which is numerical equivalent to Nero Caesar. Nero Caesar was the Antichrist, not somebody in the future, not some European consortium. So that's because of those misunderstandings of prophecy, people have been programmed, billions of people over time, to think a certain way, and by their thoughts, it all starts with an idea. They create a disaster that they think is the fulfillment of their prophecy. And then back to something I didn't finish in the first hour, the Samson option is an option where Israel basically destroys itself trying to defend itself by going to war with Iran over bombs that Iran does not have. and creates a situation that actually could destroy the Jewish state rather than preserve it. That's Samson pulling the stones of the Philistine temple on himself. He takes Iran with him and his own life. And I have been dedicated with this book, Nostradamus, The War with Iran, but from my understanding of the Jewish Christian prophet Nostradamus, that he is trying to warn the world not to go there, because as I didn't finish in the first hour, that war is not in some faraway place. If that area is disrupted, the fossil fuel flows will be disrupted for a long time. Your economies will crash. Every human being that's listening to this, wherever you are in the world, will be directly impacted in your life if there's a war there.
Disaster of biblical proportions.
Yes. Economically, it will completely disrupt this fossil fuel dependent society that we've had, and trigger quite a cascade of economic collapses and chaos in the world. So, I think what will happen is the Chinese won't allow it, because the Chinese are waiting to unload a money bomb on anyone who would start this war, and that is by using the threat of demanding America pay off all of its debts that it's holding, or if America goes to war with Iran, the threat alone of China doing this, playing brinkmanship, could stop the war dead in its tracks.
Next hour, John, I want to talk with you a little bit about Matthias Stormberger, the Bavarian, and get your take on him. You think he's the German Nostradamus?
Yes. A very unknown mystic that...
Uncanny predictions.
Remarkably in the clear.
Uncanny. He's not quite as good as you, but he did a good job. But he was around when? He's dead now, isn't he?
He was born around 1753.
He's long dead.
I would estimate he made his predictions probably and started around the 1770s.
Okay, we're going to go through some of those. Now, you've got these e-books out. I want you to tell people how they can read them and get a hold of them.
Yes, Predictions for 2014 is available on Kindle right now. So just go to the links on my website, hogueprophecy.com, and that's HogueProphecy.com. And you can see the links, or just go to Amazon, type in John Hogue, and you'll see all my different books there, the Nostradamus, The War with Iran, as well as Nostradamus, A Life in Myth, first full biography ever written on Nostradamus. And I have at my website special PDF copies of expanded versions of these books. For instance, Predictions for 2014 has this chapter in the PDF form of the Stormberger chapter that only people who donate to HogueProphecy.com can get for just a little more. So you have many options to choose, and I hope you all explore my work, because on a show like this, I can only plant seeds, a deeper understanding of whether I'm just a cuckoo or have something to say needs to be you looking deeper into it.
You got to read it. John, we're going to come back, take some calls, and of course, we'll talk about Stormberger when we come right back.